Micah, do you have your gym clothes? Are you ready to go down to the warehouse and play a game of basketball with me?
Yes. No, I'm terrible at basketball, but I did bring my gym clothes, as you suggested. I've got my spray-on antiperspirant and a sweatband, and I am ready to hit the court and make some field goals.
Ball court.
Shoot that big orange basketball.
You're my secret weapon, man. So you're going to be the best player on the team, right?
Now, do tell me, why am I your secret weapon?
Oh, no reason.
It doesn't have anything to do with my melanin.
No, you just look like you're really good at basketball.
Well, I am tall, and my dad certainly wished I was good at basketball, but I was definitely not. can anyone guess what episode we're covering right now?
It's Basketball Day on The Office, episode 5. And yeah, so we kind of start off just like we started our podcast in that Michael gives everyone a secret sign of, you know, who's ready to play some basketball. And we very quickly get back into the racially stereotyped way Michael tends to look at the employees of the office, and he is judging everyone's basketball ability by what they look like and who they are and what their gender is. And so I think that starts off, we kind of, this episode starts very quickly in that sense. And I believe this is the first time we have that little bit of pre-roll before the intro music.
I think you're right. Yeah. This is finally, we get the little bit before, which those things are typically pesky when you're trying to binge watch episodes of The Office.
Yeah. Because you do want it, because some of those usually hold some of the best little mini jokes of the episodes, and then you move into the meat and potatoes of each one. Do you want to start us off?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, for sure. Basically, yeah, we've got Michael, as Tiff said, pointing out everybody and deciding on the team, and of course he's going to pick Jim, and of course he's going to pick Ryan, because he sees Ryan as this, you know, uber awesome young guy who can do anything, and Jim as a tall, no, average guy who probably plays basketball.
And Jim just happens, he is actually good at basketball.
Yeah, he just so happens to be good at it. And then he picks Stanley because, again, Stanley is Michael's secret weapon, because as we know, it is 100% fact that every black person is good at basketball.
That's right, of course.
Right? I mean, duh. Which is why every time I take to the field with the basketball, shooting on the court with the big fields, yeah, no, that's not the case. But Michael assumes that. And then also there are some people who would like to be on the team. Dwight is one of them. Dwight embarrasses Michael in the past for some basketball stuff. And Phyllis, who wants to be on the team, and Michael assumes that she would not be good at basketball.
Well, he eventually, Michael reluctantly adds her to the team, despite what he actually wants to do, because he finds himself in kind of a faux pas of the stereotypes just keep piling on as Michael is recruiting this basketball team. He rejects Kevin because, again, he looks like he's a slumpy, overweight kind of guy who wouldn't be very good. He rejects Oscar because he's like, oh, I'll wait until baseball season because of Oscar's Latino heritage. So it keeps piling on. And then he looks over to Pam and asks Pam essentially to be the cheerleader, you know, put your hair in pigtails, wear a little crop top. And it's totally strictly based on Pam being, you know, a woman, and that she should be a cheerleader. And then Phyllis volunteers to be the cheerleader, and Michael says, yuck, which is so incredibly hurtful because Phyllis is not the typical looking perfect pinup type situation that a man like Michael would see as the ideal cheerleader.
Right.
And so he immediately assumes that she can't or shouldn't, or it would be gross to see that. And it's so untrue, because here we're finally also getting a little bit of Phyllis. We see her being a little feisty. We see her wanting to be involved. We see her, we hear a little bit in the confessional about her past and what she used to do. So it's like this character is getting developed now. We're starting to see more of Phyllis. And yet we get to see also the horrible side of Michael's reaction to Phyllis, Michael's stereotyping and pigeonholing of Phyllis, which...
It's no wonder why she doesn't, you know, why she hasn't come out of her shell thus far.
Yes.
Because of the way that he treats her.
Exactly. He beats her down in a verbally abusive way, almost, in the office. And I feel like a lot of the stereotypes and the things that come across in this episode, this is what I guess the meat of what I want to talk about here, is how it's highlighted how utterly inappropriate Michael is to everybody and pigeonholing them into stereotypes and assuming things about them because of the way they look or who they are. And it's painful and it's horrible to watch. And it's demonstrating, as good as this as a comedy show can do, how that makes people feel, because no one, very much like we discussed in the very first episode, right? Like, it's no one is saying that any of this is okay.
Right.
And like, you even see that where you even get the whole Jim tries to defend Pam's pigeonholing of, oh, you should be a cheerleader. And that makes Pam super awkward. And Jim comes right out and says, oh, I'll put on the little cheerleading dress for you, right? He's trying to like rescue her and being a little silly about it, but at the same time, just showing like, it doesn't just have to be Pam who can be a cheerleader. He's like, I could do it. And then what does Michael call him right away? He goes and like calls him gay, right? Because he's that. And then he's like, well, not for that kind of way, but for the bad at sports kind of way. And it's like, well, all of a sudden now gay people are being categorized as being bad at sports, like, which is so not true. There's people of every walk of life that are bad at sports. Like, it doesn't matter, as we know, the audience, but it's really highlighting the disrespect that he has, but at the same time, it's showing so viscerally the audience how untrue and inappropriate it all is.
Yeah. And I think, again, it's super important to note Michael represents, in many cases, very real beliefs that very real people have. Like, yes, that joke doesn't come from nowhere. The fact is, there are people who do believe that. And to see it played out like this in such a cringy way, it goes back to what I said in the pilot. I like that it is portrayed through this character that we all sort of cringe at and go, oh, what is he saying? Oh, what is he thinking? Oh, what is he doing? Because there's a certain level of learning that takes place there, and a certain level of negative reinforcement, things that you shouldn't do. So I like that we see these ignorant ideas coming forth and then being sort of batted away, or at least making us feel like, ugh, why would anyone say that? Because that's how, you know, people learn that that's not the right thing to do, or that, you know, that's not a cool thing to say or assume.
Right. We're seeing the entire office rebel against that idea. We're seeing the entire office be put off by the idea. So it's very much a majority versus these things coming from one person, you know, these ideas coming from one person and them kind of being put up with like a wall of just not acceptance. You know, they're saying like, I'm not going to listen to that. You're the ridiculous one. Everyone else knows that that's not true.
Yep. Which, again, like, I love that. I think that there's something to be said for the writers and producers of the show in their way of handling this, because we could have a show where these things are funny in a way that glorifies it, or, you know, seeing him hurt people in this way is rewarded, and it's never rewarded. I mean, Michael assuming the thing that he assumes about Stanley results in him finding out that Stanley is a really bad basketball player who can't dribble a basketball, and that doesn't work out well for his team. So it's
I love that tiny little montage that they have of everyone throwing away their garbage like right after Michael stereotypes who he thinks is good at basketball and who he thinks is not, and we see Kevin like just right into the basket, sinks it. Like, he crumples up a piece of paper, throws it into the garbage. We see Oscar do the same thing. And then we see Stanley do it as well with a bat. Like, the garbage is even closer to Stanley than everybody else. And he completely misses. And that's it. There's no dialogue during that little montage. It just quick happens. Bing, bing, bing. You see it. And the visuals of it are so perfect because they haven't even gotten down to the basketball game yet, and we're already seeing the evidence of Michael's failed secret weapon. And it's perfect that he picks all the wrong people for all the wrong reasons.
I have to be honest with you. This is one of my least favorite episodes of The Office for a particular reason. And when I say least favorite, I'm not talking about things like Scott's Tots. That is a whole different other sort of least favorite. That right. is like, in this very sick way, I still like that episode. I appreciate that episode for being so far into cringe that it just does a good job. This episode, mm-hmm. I just didn't care for. When I was growing up, several of my siblings were super, super, super into basketball. And as I mentioned before, I never really was. And so, when I would be with my dad, and we would go off to all these different basketball games all over, and it was just sort of like basketball all the time, all the time, all the time. And I'd be so bored sitting there watching all these kids play basketball. I did not care about it at all. And so basketball in general is sort of just a boring thing for me. And this episode, I like everything else that exists in it other than like the basketball game itself, because I think there's a lot of, again, we're seeing the warehouse for the first time. We're seeing how Michael sees the warehouse. And then we see this sort of interesting relationship take place between Jim and Roy as two of them get competitive, especially following what we just saw in the last episode that we talked about, which was episode 4. And if you'll remember, the alliance at the end, Roy walks in and sees Jim sort of holding Pam, her hand, and has his arm around her shoulder. And Roy goes ballistic a little bit. And mm-hmm. now they're sort of competing in front of Pam down in the warehouse.
Yeah, we're seeing that animosity, that tension has not, you know, simmered at all. I should say that tension between them has been simmering this whole time. And we're kind of seeing it come to a point and boiling up a little bit more, because now they're in a competitive situation. And we do have these really weird moments in this episode that I think are super important, where we see Pam and Roy being more intimate.
You know,
we see them kissing and Jim's awkward reaction to that when he's like right next to it. We see her talking about actually having a fun weekend and going out with Roy, that they want to take the Wave Runners to the lake, which kind of that touches on a little bit of that, the B plot, or I guess the underlying plot of that there's a possibility people need to work on Saturday. And that ends up being the, I guess, the bet that's going on for this basketball game that started off as just a friendly thing. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, let's put a wager on it. Whoever, you know, whoever loses has to come in and work Saturday. And so we see these moments between Pam and Roy that for the first time we're seeing the good parts of their relationship.
There's the why. Like, I assume that up to this point, so many people are going, why are these two even together? And this is one of those glimpses that, oh, okay, maybe I can understand it.
Right. And you can see where, like, you know, maybe back, you know, years ago, that we find out that Pam and Roy have been engaged for 3 years. And it's been so long that the gifts that they received for their engagement party are now out of warranty and starting to break. So Pam's dealing with that kind of little, we have that little thread of her life and her history and how she is with Roy. So when they're intimate together in this episode, we can see like, okay, maybe 3 years ago when they first got engaged, when they were a new couple together, where that spark came from, you know, where they could have, they were attracted to each other and their relationship grew out of that. And so it's not a complete, why is she with this guy? This is so random. This is just a plot point set up for the show so that there's a rival for Jim. It seems more real. It seems more legitimate.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Again, up to this point, you could accuse the writers of sort of writing this wrinkle into a Jim and Pam relationship, if that makes sense. Whereas mm-hmm. what this does is it establishes that there is a Roy and Pam relationship and that the wrinkle is Jim and how, you know, how that progresses. It's also, if I may, like, I think that it's a bit of a conversation about I don't know if their relationship goes as far as emotionally abusive, but it's certainly there are times where you sense this. I mean, we hear about Roy like forgetting about her at a game and stuff like that. Like you know that this relationship is not emotionally balanced or emotionally strong. And mm-hmm. I think that we see sort of Pam being such a forgiving person, she seems to always sort of go back and find out ways to forgive him. And it's a very accept the love you think you deserve kind of thing. And again, this all just sort of adds layers to this relationship that I really appreciate they took the time to do so that it wasn't some sort of, oh, and by the way, Pam's in a relationship.
Yeah, and it wouldn't make sense. But also the meekness of Pam, the way she tries to satisfy others, has feelings and desires and opinions about people, but won't express them outwardly. Like we saw during last episode with the party planning committee, she wouldn't really speak up about what she wanted or what she thought would be good for the party. She just kind of let it happen. And later on in the confessional, you hear her true thoughts.
Which I love. It was such a, right? That's one of the best lines. It's weird to touch on it now, but it, at the same time, she talks about how Angela doesn't want to gamble, which goes back to Angela being this very religious person. And she's like, of course, by her saying that, she was gambling that I wasn't going to punch her in the face or something right. like that. That's
so we so see good. That Pam has a feisty side and a fun side. And we see that with Jim. But yet we see her meekness and her introvert and how she can kind of fall back into herself and not express what she wants or her needs. And we see that the relationship she has with Roy emphasizes her meekness and her introvert side and keeps her into that place, where her relationship with Jim busts her out of her shell almost and expands her horizons, and she can speak more freely about what she wants, because I think that she's heard by Jim, but she's not heard by Roy. So she doesn't feel like even, you know, like what she says to Roy would get anywhere. So she just doesn't.
Yeah.
So she's getting different feedback from these two different men in her life. And she just happened to have the relationship with Roy first. But we'll see how Pam develops
yes.
in the future.
Indeed.
I wanted to talk about a little bit back to we go down to the warehouse for the basketball game, mm-hmm. right? And this is kind of the first time we see the warehouse cast, right? As in the future, I believe that Dwight refers to them as the others.
Like from Lost.
It's a Lost reference. And so we're seeing this whole group of characters that we almost never saw before are all the warehouse workers. And for the most part, they all stick around later on. All the people we see down there are pretty consistent. And we meet Daryl. We saw Daryl in the previous episode, but we didn't really meet him. And we see the way Michael treats the warehouse guys. And Madge.
Poor Madge. Sorry, Madge. Poor Madge.
The warehouse crew. And he has this, I don't know, racially charged, ignorant stereotypes, even though it's very diverse people down there, I should say, right?
Yes.
But Michael treats them in one way. He tries to be funny, but it's very hurtful, disrespectful. He treats them like lower class, and he undermines and devalues their contribution. He devalues and undermines their work and their intelligence and their abilities just because they are working warehouse jobs, and he feels elevated that it's different from the office workers who are upstairs wearing suits and they're downstairs wearing warehouse uniforms and they're hauling boxes of paper. But really, everyone is contributing equally to the success and promotion of this business, right?
So, mm-hmm. Well, and he makes it a point to point out that Daryl is the foreman of the warehouse instead of Roy, and it's like no one even is thinking about that, and you pointing it out just makes it awkward. Mm-hmm. For anyone who hasn't seen the show or hasn't watched this episode, Roy is white and Daryl is a person of color, and so Michael's sort of pointing out the fact that it's good that we've got this diversity check mark in that Daryl is running the warehouse. I love the the relationship that exists, despite everything, you know, bad that's there. I love the relationship that exists between Michael and Daryl specifically, but sort of the whole warehouse down there and how they see him. And when Michael introduces Daryl as Mitta Raja's neighborhood, because they're like Ryan's trying to figure out how you get from Daryl to Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. And it's so funny, this sort of changing over time. And I was trying to think of one for you, Tiff. It's like Arment to Army, Army to Hammer, Hammer to Hammy. But
it's almost like British slang, right? Like when you think about like British slang, like it's Barney Rubble, we're in trouble. Like,
yeah, it is. Yeah.
And so it's that layer of abstraction. And first of all, it's awkward because of the way Michael is and his voice, his inflection, essentially vocal blackface.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's the way Michael speaks. Like mm-hmm. he is putting on this accent and this attitude that is just so inappropriate. Because he's doing it in a kind of jokey, mocking way,
yes.
but trying to be cool.
Yes.
And it's just, it's disingenuous. And it's just like, just don't, you know, it's very similar to him doing the Chris Rock bit, right? It's mm-hmm. just, it's not good. But yet we see Daryl's reaction to it. And he is a saint.
He really like, is.
He is just.
He's got a lot of patience. He's like, bless him for his patience and serenity. And he gets, you know, he finds ways to get back at Michael, but mm-hmm. he could very easily make Michael's life a lot harder if he wanted to. And he doesn't. He just sort of, he has resigned to knowing the just utter ignorance and buffoonery of, it's almost like Daryl can't damage Michael any more than Michael already damages himself just yes. by being who he is. All Daryl has to do is like look at the camera and point at Michael and everybody's like, yeah, I know. Can you believe this guy? So there's almost no reason to sort of put your energy into that when you don't have to.
I know. And it's not Daryl's job to teach Michael the right way to be, you know,
exactly.
like it is, but yet Daryl has a very delicate hand with Michael. I think his body language and his facial expressions let Michael know that this is probably not a good idea. And at that point, it's up to Michael to kind of figure that out on his own.
And the fact is, Michael and Daryl don't have to see each other all that often.
Yes. And Daryl knows that he's way more capable than Michael. So he yes. is just, Daryl can be down there. He can run the warehouse. And he even mentions how Michael scheduling the basketball game undermines the shipments and what Daryl needs to get done to get his work done because he's a competent manager. And yet then we see it paired with Michael's incompetence where he wants to screw up essentially the whole workings of the warehouse in order for his own amusement to have a basketball game. So in order to show off his basketball skills that he doesn't have. So.
Yeah, we quickly find out that he is not good at basketball either. He's a ball hog. Many of the people on the team, again, end up not being that great. We've got, mm-hmm. again, the moments with Jim and Roy getting aggressive. And this game just does not go well from start to finish with, again, Michael just trying to take it to the hoop himself, and Dwight trying to play skins at one point.
I know. It's just a haphazard game of errors. They're like kind of half playing. They're kind of half not. Half the players don't know what's going on. Half of them don't care. Like, it's just a comedy of errors, really, in this basketball game. And I was reading some trivia that the directors just said, just play basketball. And
oh, nice.
That's all. They filmed this whole thing with just play basketball and they took all the best parts. But I love the moment where right before the game, where they don't put the hoop all the way up yet. And Michael yes. thinks he's all hot. And like he's like, oh, yeah, I'm like this great player. Look at me dunking and making baskets and everything when the hoop is at its lowered spot to like essentially be put away. And then one of the warehouse guys raises it up. And Michael like can't even
make a basket. You can see it on his face. Like, he's like, oh, no.
It's terrible.
So funny.
The game ends. I mean, after, you know, all the haphazard play. Do you want to tell us Michael's creative way of ending the game.
Oh, my Lord. So he gets sort of smacked in the face, hit in the face by one of the warehouse workers. And Michael was realizing how poorly things were going. And so he decides to devise this plan where he's going to call it a flagrant foul. And he's going to throw a fit because he got hit in the face and this, that, and the other. And the other guy's like apologizing to him and saying, I didn't mean to, you know, like, chill. It's cool. It's fine. Sorry. Michael says no. He says we need to stop the game now, sort of feeding off the other guy. He just makes it as if things are worse and worse and worse. And so then he says, well, I guess now that we're stopping the game, whoever was ahead is going to be the winner. Well, the office was ahead of warehouse at that moment. And
which Michael, is something Michael already knew.
Michael knew that, but he's yep. like, oh, we were? I didn't know that. Well, I guess that means we win. And if you'll remember, Tiff mentioned that he put a wager that whoever won the game, the person who lost, the people who lost had to come in on the weekend.
The warehouse workers are not happy about that. And they are a bunch of bigger, rougher dudes, I guess, than Michael is. And they kind of get up in Michael's face. And Michael gets intimidated away from saying, oh, never mind. We'll come in on Saturday. You guys don't have to. It's fine. No problem. Good game, everybody. And you could just see how Michael has no authority.
Exactly.
Or respect.
No, he's not respected. This group of people. And he just lost respect from his office workers as well mm-hmm. in that moment. I mean, he was losing respect the moment he started throwing a fit about getting hit. But
right.
from that point forward, and especially when he backed down and said, no, we'll come in. That lost him respect from the people in the office and also a bunch of morale. Like they go back sort of dejected as we see Kevin, you know, making a bunch of shots in the basket.
Oh, I love that. I love that so much because he was not picked at all. And then we see him just shooting basket after basket after basket. Another trivia. He makes 14 shots in a row.
IRL? Like...
In real life, while wow. he was shooting that, he made 14 in a row, which is pretty awesome. Brian
Baumgartner.
Yeah, that's it.
That's incredible.
But yeah, so he was actually, turns out Kevin was super good at basketball all along and he was rejected from even being part of the team to begin with. So we kind of end with the Michael, the authority isn't there. You know, he yeah. has no control over the warehouse. He has no control over the office. He kind of ends dejected, but he tries for one last grasp of control by telling everybody once they get back upstairs that never mind, you don't have to come in on Saturday. He's mm-hmm. like, you know what? I'm just going to call it. Like, he's like, no one's coming in Saturday. And we kind of ends on the line of like coming in an extra day is going to prevent us from being downsized. And so it's like this good gesture, but then added this sour note to it. And that's kind of everything that Michael has been doing all along. Like, you know, a good gesture with a horrible sour note to it.
It could be good if it wasn't you doing it.
Yeah. A compliment and it followed by an insult.
That pretty much hits on everything. I mean, you see him sort of trying to rebuild the thing that he broke down by giving up and you know, being afraid of the warehouse workers. And so then he comes through with this. Well, that's not going to work if you're just going to end things like it's not even going to prevent us from being downsized. So there's that thing hanging over our heads again. Mm-hmm. And I think that also is a way for the, you know, the story to continue to be told across the entire first season. As the watchers of the show, we are not meant to forget that downsizing is still a huge factor at play in the office.
Hilariously, after an entire episode of basically not working, you know?
Right. Time and time again, for God's sake, he finds ways to keep them from working, which is the thing that could actually keep them from being downsized.
All right. Shall we do our Dundee for the week?
Yes. I think it's time to give out the Dundee, Tiff.
All right. I'm going to go with the MVP Dundee for this week. Our most valuable player award goes to Kevin Malone, who didn't even play, but obviously was kind of the best at basketball out of everybody in the office. So great job, Kevin.
The true secret weapon.
He is the true secret weapon. And oh, can we just, everyone, if, as you've just watched this episode, just hold in your brain the image of Stanley dribbling a basketball because it was truly pathetic and I really like it.
Oh, me too. I just want to say thanks so much to everyone for listening. Thank you so much to those of you who've gone into Apple Podcasts and rated and reviewed the show. Love reading those and seeing. We've already got a bunch of 5-star ratings. That's really touching.
I added one.
Yeah, there you go.
In a true Michael way, I added my own review. This podcast is great.
It's the Michael spirit. And thank you to those of you who've been sharing links with us. We have enjoyed picking those up on Twitter. So go ahead and give us a follow on Twitter at @tall_beats. Until next time, I guess we're going home from the office.
Good one.
Slam dunk right there.
And our next shipment of paper next week. I don't know. All right, goodbye.